So, we'll start this topic. I'm not sure if we'll finish. I have depends how. Well, yeah, but I already told you the Gimel was really Bet, but and Bet. No, but this particular topic is inviting people on Shabbat. So I told you that I was going to do this. So as I said, I'm not sure. Now, inviting people on Shabbat is a good thing. But here we're talking about inviting somebody on Shabbat who most likely will break Shabbat in order to come over. The first tshuva that we're going to look at is from Rav Moshe Feinstein. It's in his book, in the Igrot Moshe, Volume 1, it's number 98, and the 99 we'll look at right afterwards, even though he wrote 99 before he wrote 98, for some reason he published them in this sequence, and that's the sequence that we'll look at them at. This tshuva, it says, Balabatim sherotzim la'asot minyan avur chinucha yiladim. They want to have a children's minyan. Lay people, balabatim would be lay people in the community, want to have a minyan, a prayer group for children, avur chinucha yiladim, uborur sheyavo b'mishins, b'michoniot, and it's clear that they're going to come by car. And he wrote b'Shabbat on Shabbat, and he wrote this on Yud Gimel Tammuz Tov Shin Tedvav. The one perhaps interesting historical element of this tshuva is who he writes it to. He writes it liyudidi Harav Moreinu Rabbeinu Rab Arye Moshe Eliyahu Kaplan Shlita, who is better known as Rabbi Arye Kaplan. This is, as far as I was able to check or ascertain, the only tshuva that was written from Rav Moshe to Arye Kaplan. Somebody once told me that when Arye Kaplan was an incredible genius, and he died very young, he wrote a host of books, but somebody told me that when he was young, he was, shall we say, a little confident, self-confident, and he once said, "I'm going to get smichas, I won't have to ask Rav Moshe any questions." So I didn't know about this tshuva at the time, but I was involved in editing one of his books, the Handbook of Jewish Thought, the second volume, and I was given a couple chapters to do the footnotes, so to go through the footnotes. So I did add in a couple of tshuvot of Rav Moshe in the footnotes there, but because I figured that would be good for his neshama. But anyway, he here asks Rav Moshe a question. Now, also what's interesting is it was written in 1955. So I quickly went back to check to see how old Arye Kaplan was at this time, because he should not have been all that old, and in fact, he was around 22 or 23 years old. I looked on Wikipedia, which I don't know how much you can trust these things. Because then I looked, and there was a very interesting line about him. So I looked for the source where they got this from. So then I found that they were quoting me. I was the source in the article. So that didn't do. No, I looked. I said, "Well, that's ridiculous," because I was looking for something authoritative. I don't. There should be, but it's very convenient. But that should be a lesson to all of you when you go looking something up and you find that you were quoted.
Well, if he quoted you and you're saying you wanted more authoritative, what you wrote wasn't.
It amused me nonetheless. Anyway, as far as I know from his biography at this particular point, he was in Lexington, Kentucky, which is also not written down in any place, which to my mind does make a difference, because you're not talking necessarily about a kid who lives in Borough Park and telling the kid to come to drive to shul in Borough Park in Lexington, Kentucky, which is somewhat of a, shall we say, a marginal Jewish community. Years ago, I did work with NCSY in a region that was called Central East, and they did have some kids from Lexington, Kentucky. And again, this was not necessarily the most religious area in America. And he writes in his tshuva as follows: Hinei b'davar ritzon habalabatim lasot minyan avor ha'yiladim l'chanchan, regarding the desire of the community in order to have a minyan for the kids, shebarur sheyavo b'machoniot, it's clear that they can come by car, v'yichalelu ha'shabbat mitzad rechuk ha'makom, and they will break Shabbat because of the distance that they live to the shul. Rav Moshe writes, pashut uborur sha'asur afliktanim she'en b'nei mitzvah. It is simple, it is clear that it is not allowed, even for children who are not bar mitzvah yet. D'chi chinuch tefila aduf mi chinuch mitzvah Shabbat. the purpose to bring them here is to be machanech them, to teach them how to daven, how to pray. So are you going to argue that to teach them how to pray is worthwhile if at the same time you're teaching them how to break Shabbat? Rav Moshe says, absolutely one should not agree to this. This is not called chinuch for mitzvot. Rather, this is the opposite. This causes chinuch in how to break Shabbat, not to a life of mitzvot, and so on. Let's continue. If the members of the shul won't listen, and they won't listen to you, and they're going to do this minyan, which will be against the Shabbat, and so on, and kfodo, and you don't have the ability, it's saying him, and you, kfodod, harav, and so on, you don't have the ability of breaking this, rak b'mecha'a b'dvarim, you can only protest. Eini ra'ema yachol kvodo lasot, I don't see what you can do, od aval mikol makom tzarech b'kol ha'et l'daber b'zeh b'chom ha'iser. You should nonetheless keep on speaking about how severe this is, ve'imiz damein eze etza, and if you have the opportunity, shechol ha'fir zeh, that you can ever break this minyan, vade yitchayev la'hafir zeh, then you should cause the minyan to be stopped, l'vatel et minyan shegorim chilul Shabbat, and you should do whatever you can to stop this minyan that causes chilul Shabbat. U'bavadei kol zman shiyah minyan, and certainly the whole time that the minyan exists, yesh lechvodo ledaber um kol echad mehiladim, you should approach each kid be yichud individually, sheyavo beregel, that he should come by foot, ulay yo'il, maybe it'll help ze la'achadim mehem, for some of them, ki zeo mitzvah tochacha v'limud. That's really what we call tochacha, and that's teaching somebody mitzvot, yidido Moshe Feinstein. Now,
I think that last part, to speak to each child and tell them what's wrong with what they're doing, or to tell them
they should walk, and tell them they should insist on walking.
Like, give them like an option, like, you know.
Tell them they should insist on walking and they shouldn't drive, but that's as far as Moshe goes. Now, again, this is written in 1955, which I think is very significant. Today, if you were to ask many, many rabbis or lay people what their impression is on this particular law, I think their impression is that we're generally lenient and do invite people. I'm saying generally. I'm not going to, obviously, within generally there's going to be a range, but I think that's the general impression. And it could be that some of you were a little bit surprised at Rav Moshe's severity over here, where he not only says that this is not a good thing, he says you should do anything you can to stop this minyan. This is not chinuch, this is the opposite. I would hesitate to totally separate this tshuva from the historical context in which it exists. And by the way, the one thing I'll warn you about before we continue is that the tshuva, the second one, the next one that we're about to read, is even more severe than the first one. It's not less severe, it's even more severe. But, you know, you have an age that the conservative movement is taking down mechitzot. You have an age where the conservative movement is changing the tefillot, and you have an age where the conservative movement is telling people that they are allowed to drive to shul on Shabbat. I was once involved in a debate. It wasn't something I volunteered for. A friend of mine had agreed to be in this between Reformed, Conservative, Secular, and Orthodox. He agreed, but he got sick, and he was hospitalized, and his wife called me from his hospital room and asked if I would take his place. So I wanted to say no, but even I'm not that cruel. So, and but I just thought it was silly. I just think that these debates don't do all that much. But throughout the debate, all of them, the secular, conservative, reform, they're all saying that orthodoxy is fossilized and we have to keep up with the times and we have to make changes and so on. So when it was my turn to speak, one of the things that I said was that the conservative movement did make changes. For example, they thought you're allowed to drive to shul on Shabbat. So in terms of a long-term policy, what exactly did this cause? Prior to driving to shul on Shabbat, people knew that if they wanted to buy a house, they would buy a house near a Jewish community, near a shul. But if you're allowed to drive to shul, then you can live five. Once you get in the car, what does it make a difference? 5 minutes or 15 minutes or 20 minutes? So what allowing people to drive to shul on Shabbat caused is people to live further and further from the community. What that caused is, and by the way, let's be honest, because most conservative Jews today don't drive to shul on Shabbat. They drive, even though the original tshuva was you were only allowed to drive to shul and no place else. The drive to shul is pikuach nefesh somehow. This will keep people Jewish, and therefore you're allowed to drive to shul. But there was no had to drive anyplace else. And most conservative Jews, what did they conclude from this? That you're allowed to drive on Shabbat. Do they go to shul every week? Not necessarily. But I said, but what was the long-term considerations? That people started moving further and further from shul. So what happened? That meaning they live outside of the Jewish community. So what happens? They sent their kids to schools where there aren't that many other Jews around. So what happened because of that? It increases the rain, it increases intermarriage and assimilation. So letting people drive to shul on Shabbat, where you fixed and updated things, led directly, without any question, to increased numbers of assimilation into marriage. So that was my response to going ahead and changing things. I mean, I said a lot more than that. But how do you think they liked that?
Not much.
The whole room was completely silent. Not a word. No, nobody countered that.
Nobody could.
Right. Let's look at Rav Moshe's next tshuva. As I said, he only gets better. We'll see right now. We'll give the year on it, 53.
Are you differentiating between a shul that's sort of much more public and whatever statements it makes are much more than...
I'm not sure. Based on what... Let's continue. Let's continue, because in the first tshuva, he didn't really give his reasons for it. What did he say? This is not chinuch, this is chinuch against... But in the second one, he'll give reasons. And 1953, as we're about to see. Yes. Yes.
In 1955, the conservative movement was much more conservative, closer to orthodoxy.
But that's when changes were being made. I mean, the Rav wrote a famous article, and it was about Michitzot. It was 1955, where he felt there needed to be a response to it. But let's look at this truth from 53. Be'or isur sheyesh b'hizmanat anashim sheyavo l'tpalel b'beit haknesset b'shabbat. Regarding what is the prohibition of inviting people to come to shul on Shabbat, kishiyodin sheyavo b'mishins, when you know that they're going to come, machines. And this was written on the 40th day of the Omer, Tavshin Yud Gimel, 1953. Nishalti meharav Avtali Kalibach, mi Detroit. Im yesh isur lefnei iver lahazmin anashim. So over here, he's already letting us know what the isur is going to be, what the prohibition is, namely, Lifnei Iver, putting a stumbling block in front of the blind. Is there a problem? And by the way, putting a stumbling block in front of the blind, which we're going to look at in a little bit, because that's really going to be the main topic of the discussion today, there is a general consensus that the prohibition is not just putting a stumbling block in front of the blind, it's giving them bad advice or causing somebody to do something which is wrong and so on. In fact, there is almost no place in rabbinic literature that says that to literally put a stumbling block in front of the blind is also a problem, but except for the Minchat Chinuch, who points this out. He goes, well, it's obvious that to do that is also the Isser, but the Isser, the prohibition, generally has been spread out to mean to give somebody bad advice in order to hurt somebody. That's called putting a stumbling block in front of the blind. It is also the literal interpretation, but there's certainly a lot of other symbolic interpretations of it. So over here, he's the question which is being asked, to invite someone to come to shul on Shabbat, where they're going to drive to shul, by inviting them, are you breaking a Torah prohibition of Lifnei Iver? Are you putting a stumbling block in front of the blind? So he writes, Im yesh isir Lifnei Iver, as min anashim sheyavo litpalel b'shabbat lebet haknesset, kishiyodea shechalalu ha-shabbat b'nisiya b'mishins. That you know that they are going to drive, is this considered to be Lifnei Iver? V'hishavti, Rav Moshe says, I answered, to invite someone who lives far away where there is no way for them to come without breaking Shabbat, vaday asur, without any question, this is not allowed. Vuhu od garua mi isur lifnei iver. The question was lifnei iver. Moshe answers, this is worse than lifnei iver. This is worse than putting a stumbling block in front of the blind. Hu od bi isur mesit. This is a problem of a mesit. Who knows what a mesit is? Someone who incites someone to sin. Now, this part of Rav Moshe, which he's going to have to defend himself right now, is not all that simple. The prohibition of mesit is mentioned in the Torah and generally in rabbinic literature in only one context. And that is the context of Avodah Zarah. the person who incites someone to worship Avodah Zarah. That's where that is what the Torah speaks of. That is the source in the Gemara, which means it's not to say to somebody, let's go to McDonald's. That's a different problem. But for someone, even though there's a rumor that it's kosher now in Jerusalem. I don't know. Even though there's a rumor that it's kosher. But according to the Gemara, it seems to be that the only application of mesit, of inciting somebody to sin, is only that special prohibition is only by Avodah Zarah. Now Rav Moshe has to defend himself, and he says, "V'af she'isur mesit l'chayev skila hu rak mesit la'avod avodat kochavim." Even though the punishment of skila, of death by stoning, is only by inciting someone to do idolatry, mikol makom le'inyan isur va'onesh klape shmaya, nonetheless, regarding a prohibition and a punishment as far as God is concerned, bikol hachomer, in turning of all of the severity, she'ein tonin lemesit, that you don't argue anything good for a mesit. This, again, it's considered to be a very severe law. Yesh bikol isurin k'mufresh b'Sanhedrin. All of this applies, as we see in the Gemara Sanhedrin. So what's his proof going to be? He says, she'yelef Rav Shimon ben Nachman, amar Rav Yonatan, minayin she'ein tonin lemesit, minachash akadmoni. That there the Gemara says, how do you know that you don't even ask a mesit for an explanation, and there's no arguing for mesit? We see this from the Nachash in Garden of Eden. Af shlo yachet avodah zarah ela isur achila me'etz hadat. And there, it wasn't avodah zarah; it was only eating from the tree of knowledge. Now, I'm not convinced that this is the best proof. A, this is an agadah, and how much do you really learn legal issues from an agadah? And on the other hand, in the Garden of Eden, when God says not to eat the tree, and you eat the tree, and he added one more thing. When you eat the tree, the Nachash said, you will be like God. So maybe there is an aspect of Avodah Zarah in this as well. So again, it's a little hard to take this proof and go against just the preponderance of in terms of the verses, in terms of all the sugyot, except for this one line. Rav Moshe seems to be stretching this a little bit, but Rav Moshe, again, he wants to say, tell you that not only is this not allowed because it's lifnei iver, it's even considered to be mesit, and you get the feeling that Rav Moshe is piling it on now, and he does not want anybody to participate in such things. Chazina shisur mesit, and by the way, just to defend Rav Moshe, Rav Lichtenstein gave a share on this, and he pointed out that in the Mor Nevuchim, the Rambam, the Guide for Perplexed, does say that mesit philosophically does apply to other areas and not just Avodah Zarah. So he could have supported himself in that. But again, that's a philosophical perspective, and we'll have to see how simple this is. Ach she'enon shim b'dei adam rak mesit l'Avodah Zarah avo b'dine shemayim ye'anash v'lo yomadenu alav san goriya. He says that whoever does this, whoever invites somebody, will be punished by heaven, and there will be no defending such a person. So again, Rav Moshe is really being quite strict. Now let's just read a little bit more, because he didn't really explain to us why these things apply. He just said this is lifnei iver, and this. Now, if you'd never learned anything about lifnei iver, you would say, you know what, that sounds pretty good. You're causing somebody to sin, and you're encouraging that you're inciting them to sin. You're causing them to sin. Maybe he's right. The is lifnei iver yesh af be'enim rechokim kokach kishi yadua sheit atzlu lelech bereglem v'yaso b'mishins. So here he draws a distinction, and he says, Lifnei Iver will be even if they are pretty close. They live close, right? And they could walk. You would still be guilty in Lifnei Iver, because they would not have driven in this direction. You're inviting them is what's causing them to sin. But on the other hand, he says, if they live pretty close, you're not a mesit, because you're not inciting them to sin, because they could have done it anyway. This distinction is not all that clear that he's making. V'im eina b'loshon hazmana, and if you don't actually invite them, elostam hoda'a she'osim minyan, v'not nimprasim, if you just mention to them, oh, by the way, there's going to be, a kid's minyan, and there are going to be prizes out to the kids. You don't invite them, you let them know about it. Rav Moshe then admits, levim et palel she'kavana be'etzem hurak l'krovam, you really just, you know, want to bring them close. You know that, sorry, you only want people that live close to come, but you know the people from further will come as well, by machines, by car. then if that's the case, it's not really mesid, because you didn't tell them to come, you just informed them about it. Uvedin lifnei iva yesh l'stapek. Now this is very interesting, because Rav Moshe, even though he came out in the beginning, absolutely not, but he said, if you just inform them, you know, like a bris, right? You don't invite them, you inform them. He says it's not so simple if it's mesid, it's not so simple if lifnei iva either. And he says, therefore, the shul should be told, you're only going to give prizes to kids who walk. And anybody who comes in the car, not. So again, Rav Moshe, you really do get the sense that he's involved in a cultural war. And he's mustering what he can to fight that war. He, again, also just to get a sense of the times, the last paragraph here, he deals with the question of should a person leave a shul like this? Uvadosh rotz l'stadek b'liyot member. If a person maybe doesn't want to be a member, or chaver b'bei knesset, sh'arbei mitpalelim sham, ein magim k'shura. We have a lot of people who are not necessarily religiously upstanding. Da'ati nota she'en l'stadek k'dei she'yeh mishim chabi adam. He goes, I wouldn't, just because there's some members who aren't proper, don't leave so quickly. Someone should be there to tell them what to do. Ve'ein l'tya'esh, and don't give up. Lomar shavadei lo yishmo, say they're not going to listen. Ki ma'at mina or docha herbe mina choshech. A little bit of light can extinguish a great deal of darkness. U'lechein will light to il hamacha l'harbe isurim. And maybe your protests will help get rid of lots of prohibitions. Achu kol zeh sheminagim bebeit knesset k'shura. But this, what I'm telling you, is only if their practices are proper. What does he mean by that? Aval im yishanu chas v'shalom miseid yubeit ha-knesset. If they're going to change things in the shul, kigon sheyisalku ha-mechitza, they're going to take down the mechitza shebein anashim l'anashim, o sheyishanu af b'miktzat seder ha-tfilah v'kriyat ha-torah, or they're going to change either the davening or the reading of the Torah, mechuyavim kol yirei Hashem l'stalek milot members sham. Then a person should leave the shul. Shins of Moshe is being very, very clear over here. Here you have, if it's an Orthodox shul that's inviting people to come, he says, again, he talks of protesting, but here he's saying, but if it's a shul that starts slipping towards what we would call conservative, the shuls, the mechitza is going to come down, the prayer is going to be changed, at that point he says that there's no reason for you to stay any longer, you should stop going to that shul. Rav Soloveitchik, I think, went even further on that. He said that if you go to a shul, which is a conservative shul, and they're blowing the shofar, you're not yotzei the shofar. Now, why that would be, that's really quite amazing, but I'm not going to go any further into this. Now, as far as the Mesid comment goes, I already dealt with that a little bit. It's not the normative approach to Mesid. Rav Moshe has a huge chiddush or novel idea when it comes to Mesid, to say that this would be a prohibition of Mesid. But in order for it to be Mesid, it has to be a prohibition, right? The question is, are you guilty? Have you broken a law here? And what law have you broken? So what law did he throw out? He threw out, this is lifnei iver. So let's investigate and see if this is really a prohibition of lifnei iver. The Gemara tells us, which is in source number 3, the English is not the whole source, but just part of it, what's significant. Minayin shelo yoshit adam kos yayin l'nazir. What does that mean? Minayin, how do we know? Shelo yoshit adam kos shel yayin l'nazir. How do I know a person should not? Now, what does yoshit mean? To stretch out their hand. This is very significant, the language. The Gemara will come back and tell us. How do I know that a person, what's a nazir? Somebody who can't drink wine. How do I know that a person's not allowed to stretch out their hand and give a cup of wine to a nazir? Or the Avram and Achai l'bnei Noach, or you can't give a piece of a live animal to a non-Jew, Talmud Lomer, because it says in the Torah, for lefnei iva lo titein michshol, you're not allowed to put a stumbling block in front of a blind person. So here we see again a classic example of the Gemara's application of the idea of putting a stumbling block. What's the stumbling block? It's a moral stumbling block, giving the wine to a nazir. The Gemara continues, and we'll skip a little bit. Haba et askinan, in the third line, where those three letters together, hey bet ayin, haba askinan, here we're talking about a case, dekai betray avre nahara. We're talking about a case of when are you placing a stumbling block if you and the other person are on two sides of a river. On his side of the river, there's no wine. You are the one who supply and facilitate his sin. Which means, The Gemara's conclusion over here is, what is Lifnei Iver? Is Lifnei Iver necessarily the guy in the kiosk selling cigarettes? Well, you certainly are not allowed to smoke in terms of Jewish law. Right? You all agree with me? You certainly are not allowed to smoke in terms of Jewish law. So therefore, are you guilty of Lifnei Iver if you work in a kiosk and you sell cigarettes? Well, you walk up and down any of the major streets in any of the major cities, and you will find dozens and dozens of places that will sell cigarettes. So that particular person selling cigarettes, is he guilty of Lifnei Iver? So over here, according to the Gemara's definition of Lifnei Iver would be if you facilitate in such a way that the person could not have done this without you. And therefore, the Gemara's example is that our Nazir lives on a deserted island. You have the only ferry that goes back and forth to the island. You bring in your ferry your wine, or your cigarettes as the case may be, and you supply the Nazir with wine. At that point, the Gemara says, you are guilty of Lifnei Iver. That is the Gemara's conclusion. Daikonami, the Gemara says, and pay attention, be middayek. Daikonami diktani lo yoshit, velo ktani lo yitain. It said not to stretch out your hand, it didn't say not to give. Which means giving the Nazir wine is not the problem. That's not Lifnei Iver. When is it Lifnei Iver? If you stretch out your hand and give it to him, which means you're the only one who supplies him this wine. So as far as the Gemara is concerned, that if the person could have sinned without you, it is not Lifnei Iver. If they could not have sinned without you, then it is Lifnei Iver. So now if I go back and I think about Lifnei Iver in terms of this case, if the individual who I invited to the shul did not have a car, and I tell them, please come, and they say, well, I live too far, and I don't have a car. And I say to them, well, I have a car, and I'm not using because it's Shabbat. You can use my car, and I give them the keys. I say, come, drive to shul on Shabbat. That would be Lifnei Iver, because they could not have done it otherwise, and I facilitated it. But what if I just invite them? Did I necessarily facilitate them to break Shabbat? So I'm saying, Rav Moshe is, again, throwing out and saying, no, this is certainly prohibited. Again, the first tshuva, he says, it's not chinuch, it's anti-chinuch. Right? It's not chinuch, it's anti-chinuch. Okay, that I can understand. In terms of the argument of Mesit, that is, as I said, a very novel interpretation of Mesit, which nobody else, as far as I know, in rabbinic literature has brought down in a halachic context that you could have Mesit from other kinds of laws. But even to claim that it's Mesit, that would presuppose that you're doing something which is not allowed. And over here, in this particular case, even though it may sound that you are quote-unquote causing the person to sin, is that really true? Which means the law of Lifnei Iver is when you not just cause them to sin, it's much more than that, that you facilitated the sin.
So in other words, it's more like the conservative, the original Psak Halacha that says people who aren't driving on Shabbat may now drive to shul. Whereas today...
And that would have been Lifnei Iver. That would have been Lifnei Iver.
So one second.
Right, so therefore, to argue Lifnei Iver is not as simple as Rav Moshe is putting it here.
Right, because in other words, you're not saying, the question is, if they didn't know about the youth minion, would they stay home all day, or would they do something else?
Well, so that's the difference between inviting them for Friday night or for youth dinner. Friday night, they would be going out. Youth minion, no one would be getting up on a Saturday morning. Of course you're causing them, but I'm kidding. So that's the point over here. Are you really causing them to sin or not? So at least in terms of the Gemara's definition of Lifnei Iver, does Rav Moshe's analysis necessarily stand up? So I'm just pointing out, it's not as simple as he puts forward over here. Okay, now, there is another possibility. And that is that Rav Moshe was not necessarily talking about a Torah level of Lifnei Iver. It could also be a rabbinic level of Lifnei Iver. Now, where do we see that such a thing exists? Look at Tosod in source number 6. The Gemara brings up a case which we're not going to get into. It says, Vaha, V'im tomer, if you're going to ask, v'hoka over lifnei iv lo tin mechsha, maybe this is the case of, that you're breaking lifnei iv. V'afilu mayri shahaya yochol itlo, afilu lo yabil yado, delo over mishum lifnei iv, v'demoshe tkos yayin lenazir, muki lo beperakama, devotis karm, dekai betray avri denahara. He goes, but the Gemara ends up saying that lifnei iver is only if it's two sides of the river, right? Not where you facilitate, not just help. Mikol makom, Tosfot writes, nonetheless, isid rabbonon miha ika. Nonetheless, there's still a rabbinical, helping somebody to sin, or inviting someone to sin, still has a rabbinic prohibition. What's the rabbinic prohibition? And that's not that clear. Tosfot writes, ika shechayiv lafrisho mi iser, because you certainly would have to stop a person from sinning. Because how can, I mean, generally, if somebody sins and you see somebody sinning, you have to tell them, by the way, you're sinning. You have to give tochacha. So therefore, to help someone to sin would certainly go against the idea of tochacha. Now, the question over here is how to understand this rabbinic level of lifnei iver. And there are at least three different ways of understanding it. One way of understanding it is that just like on a Torah level you have lifnei iver, you have a rabbinic level of lifnei iver, and it's exactly the same thing. And what's the difference? The Torah level of Ne'ivah is two sides of the river. A rabbinic level of Ne'ivah would be even one side of the river. That would be one way of understanding it. Second way of understanding it would be that it's not a problem of Ne'ivah at all, but the rabbinic level would be that there is a mitzvah of Tochacha, which, by the way, you can tell me right now, but Tochacha, to give rebuke, is a Torah mitzvah. But over here, there's a rabbinic instruction that you are not allowed to invite someone to break a law, because then you are going against the mitzvah of tochacha. So therefore, it's a side point that comes in. And we'll see exactly why that may or may not be significant soon. The third way of looking at it is that it's a completely different law. And the law, again, the first is that it's part of lifnei iver. The second is law of tochacha. The third is a new law. It's a new law would be lifnei iver, but one step lower. And this is called misayeya Lide Ovre Avera, aiding and abetting sinners. On a Torah level, you can't facilitate sin. On a rabbinic level, you can't help somebody sin. Rashi, in the next source, talks about Misayeya. Rashi writes, Lo Tovor V'lo Tuchon Ima. Again, we don't want to get into whatever Gemara he's talking about. He writes, Lisayeya, that's how you spell it. Lisayeya, to help the person. Mipnei she'asur l'sayeya biyadayim yidei ovrei avera bishat havera. You're not allowed to help somebody who sins at the point of sin. Now, a lot of achronim note something in Rashi over here, which I think some of you would have noted. What is it? Bishat havera. Rashi, therefore, then if I'll ask, so what's the difference between the Torah level of lifnei iver versus the rabbinic level of lifnei iver? So over here, we just now learned that this rabbinic level of misayeya, aiding and abetting the sinner, the rabbis say, how can't you aid and abet a sinner? Right now. But let's say you're going to do something which in the future they may help them sin, that's not the rabbinic prohibition. Which means, for example, for me to invite somebody and say, tomorrow there's going to be a minyan, I'm not aiding them to sin. If it's not lifnei iver, because they could have done it any otherwise, according to what we're reading in Rashi right here, it may not be misayeya either, because it's not taking place right now. In source 14, for example, we're not going to read through the whole source, but in source 14, this is the Netziv, Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin. He has a tshuva about a kosher butcher who sells kosher and non-kosher food, and he generally sells the kosher to Jews, non-kosher. Al dvar tabach asher zer darkolim kor basar trefa shebiado labatei hasarim. He'll sell the non-kosher food that he has to various sarim, the ministers in the government. And one of the sarim is a Jewish sinner. V'hine echad mi hasarim hu Yisrael poshea. Im reshei lavi leveito gamkin basar trefa. Is he also allowed to give him the non-kosher food? Which is what he wants. He doesn't want the kosher food. Kosher food is more expensive. But by the way, I don't want to get into the whole tshuva here, because it could be that maybe you'd be obligated to sell him the kosher food at a cheaper price. But he wants. But let's just even say this guy's insisting on the. He wants the. He wants the. It's not a salt. He wants the hind quarters, which they never really sold in Europe, or whatever the case may be. This guy wants the non-kosher food, and you were allowed to sell it to him, he ends up saying, yes, you're allowed to sell it to him. Why? Because he, first of all, he could have bought it other way. If he could have bought it from someone else, then it's not lifnei even on a Torah level. Again, only if he's on the island and there's no other suppliers would be the problem. There's lots of other butchers you can get it from. And then he goes to the second point, so therefore it's not a Torah level of lifnei iver, it's a rabbinic level of misayeya. But being that the guy is not going to eat it immediately, but there's a time lag involved, then it's not misayeya as well. As I said, this may surprise you somewhat, but this is in fact the conclusion. No, it's not talking about cook. Look at the second paragraph again on top of page 4. May at la shitra tosvot to shari la shitla mumar below tre avri denare. As la shit to tell you. He goes, regarding tosvot, tosvot's position, if a guy is a mumar, I'll explain to that, somebody who's a sinner, he says, then you're allowed to give him as long as it's not two sides of the river, below tre avri denare, right? Then you're allowed to give it to him. There's no problem. And even according to Rashi, well, l'shita drashi asur, right? Then it should be a problem. Miu yeshlamu dafilu l'shita drashi lo sur b'maseya lefnei shat avera. According to Rashi, if it's before the moment of sin, there is no prohibition of misayeya. Which means, according to Rashi, certainly the way that we see understood by the Netziv, the problem of misayeha, our rabbinic level of lefnei iver, is only if you are directly causing somebody to sin, even though they could have sinned without you. Again, I think all this is clear by now, right? Lifnei iver is you facilitate sin, which means they could not sin without you. Misayeya is you are helping somebody to sin. There is according to Rashi, a rabbinic prohibition of lifnei iver, but that is only a prohibition if there's an immediate result. If there's no immediate result, then the rabbinic prohibition doesn't apply. If they do it right now. Let's continue, because I think once we're going to go into this area at all, we need to judge another issue, and that is, so what's the upside of this? I mean, why do we want to go in this direction at all? So I think the upside, we begin to realize that there the upside is minimal. If we'll take a look for a moment in the Shulchan Aruch in source number 12. Here is where the laws of Lifnei Iver made it into the Shulchan Aruch. Where is it? Hilchot Avodat Kochavim. Here it's talking about, okay, certain business dealings. Rama writes, V'dafka l'kohen ala ovet kochavim, shechazku sheyaktir halavona ala ovet kochavim, aval astam ovet kochavim shari. And here it's talking about certain things that you may be or not be allowed to sell to somebody who may use it for avodat kochavim. So therefore, let's say there's some kind of incense. If you sell it to them, they may be using it the next day. So are you allowed to sell it to them, or are you facilitating somebody to do avodah zarah? So the Rama writes, and that's what's important to us over here, the Rama writes, Yesh omrim had asulim kor lehem dvarim ashayachim l'avodotam, that which we say that you're not allowed to sell things which they're going to use for their avodah zarah, Hainu dafka im ein lehem acherim kiyotze bo o shelo yuchlu leknop b'makom acher. That's only if they don't have already something like this, or they couldn't buy it in a different place. Why is he saying that? That's the two sides of the front. So here you see that point of the two sides of the river is written in Shulchan Aruch. Okay, now you know that the two sides is in Shulchan Aruch. You just saw it black and white by the Rama. Aval im yuchul meknop b'makom acher, but if they could have bought it someplace else, mutar limkor lehem kol davar, then you can sell it to them. Because why? Because then it's not lifnei iver. Then you're not facilitating. And then he continues and writes v'yesh machmirim, and there are some who are machmir. And then he continues and writes v'nahagu lahakel kisvar rishona. Some people are machmir. Why would some people be machmir? Because some people think there may still be a rabbinic problem, and we'll see that in a moment. But still, the minhag is like the first thing, and what's the first thing saying? You're allowed to do it as long as that you're not facilitating, that they could do it otherwise. V'kol bal nefesh yachmir la'atzmo. And nonetheless, a person should be careful not to do it, which means all things being equal, it's better not to do it. Are you breaking a Torah law if it's not like two sides of the river? No. Let's look at the shach.
You said like someone is selling incense, which may be used
Right.
Like, it might not be used. It's not the same as offering wine to someone who's not allowed to drink.
Okay, but they will buy it to use it for avodah zarah. Presumably that's the case. Look at the Shach who's commenting on this, where it's underlined. Or from the beginning, this virle. Which means when are you not allowed to do it? It's only when it's two sides of the river. Okay, so now we see very clearly that that is what the Shulchan Aruch rules, that is the source. Right? And some people are machmir, v'sovrim, why do they machmir? They say, no, there may still be a rabbinic law. Remember, now we said that there could still be a rabbinic level of lifnei iver. Afilu lo havi kamotrei avre denahara, even when it's not compared to two sides of the river. V'kol ze ledat harav, all that is the opinion of the Rama. And now the Shach writes, aval lefi ani da'ati, according to my humble opinion, d'lo pligi d'kul yamim modim la mordechai v'tos v'perkama d'vodos chavim d'ba'or v'kochavim o mumar shari. He said, in my opinion, there is no rabbinic level of lifnei iver by an idolater. He adds one more word there, which I'll get to, but by an idolater, there's no rabbinic level of lifnei iver. Why not? Why not? So it could, first of all, if he's of the opinion that the problem is one of tochacha, so then there's no tochacha to a non-Jew. Once it's not lifnei iver, then it would be allowed. But he added one more word over here. La'ovid kachavim o mumar. What's a mumar? A mumar is a Jew who is a sinner. Which means a non-practicing Jew, there would also, the Shach says, be no prohibition. Because a non-practicing Jew, you may not have any obligation of tochacha. Now, I want to be very careful with this source. And he continues a couple lines later, and he reveals that's really the reason behind this, because he gets into the whole issue of tochacha. He writes, by a Jew, you're obligated to stop him from sinning. Where it's underlined, Masha'en came by Ovid Kochavim Yisro Mumar, She'enu Chayiv La'afrisho. Then you're not obligated to stop a person from sinning. Hochech tochiach et amitacha. And the question is, can somebody ever no longer the status of amitecha? Somebody who is a habitual sinner may not be within the mitzvah of tochacha. And therefore, he comes to the conclusion that there would be no rabbinic problem, because the rabbinic problem is only because of tochacha, and therefore it doesn't exist. Now, how far to take this shach is unclear, because on the one hand, and that was really the spirit of everything that we did a couple of weeks ago, we had all of these arguments to say why Mechalel Shabbat in our generation is not necessarily a mumar, right? We saw all of those tshuvot that today the person says kiddush and the person, they don't do this because they reject God's existence, they do this because either they were educated that way, all kinds of other reasons. So it's not so simple to take this line of the Shach and apply it, although, again, I just want all of us to understand where we are, how far we've gotten. Because Rav Moshe's contention was that this is lifnei iver and this is meisit, and I'm not completely convinced that Rav Moshe's contention, either of meisit or of lifnei iver, will stand up upon analysis. And again, then I have to say, so to what extent was Rav Moshe dealing with what he saw as a problem in the 50s that had to be combated? Although there's no evidence whatsoever that Rav Moshe ever backed down from this. And as far as I know, his children, who are two major poskim, Rav Reuven and Rav Feinstein, both of them continue to paskin in this way, even though there are lots of reasons, which I haven't gotten to all of them yet, but I think you can already suspect them right now, there are lots of reasons one could be more makel. Look, in today's quote-unquote world where there's, well, it is a world, not a quote-unquote world, in today's quote-unquote kiruv world, where people have much more sensitivity in terms of outreach, which is really a change that most likely took place over the last 20 years in America, where you have all kinds of outreach kolels and outreach minyanim and outreach programs in all kinds of little cities all over America, and even sometimes in some big cities, then it is very common for people to get invitations. Again, why they may get is another thing. There's a fellow who... a number of years ago, and most likely he will listen to this because he listens to much of what I put up. He was by our house for Shabbos around a year and a couple months ago, and he said that when he was living in Texas, then people would invite him and whatever, and when he moved to a larger Jewish community, there was he asked the rabbi, where he can go on Shabbos and whatever, and the rabbi absolutely refused to help him, and he was very upset. He thought the rabbi was cold and the rabbi was insensitive. So when he told me this, I said, do you know if this rabbi is a student of Moshe Feinstein? He goes, I have no idea. He goes, why is that important? I said, well, if this person is a student of Moshe Feinstein, then it's very reasonable that he follows Rav Moshe's psak on this, which absolutely he should, if he's a follower of Rav Moshe. And Rav Moshe felt that facilitating people to drive on Shabbat is absolutely not allowed, again, based upon the reasons that we saw. It's lifnei even. More than that, it's mesit. And as far as, and if this person followed Rav Moshe, I understand why it wasn't that he was not as warm or so as the others, that he's following a different tradition in terms of how to deal with this particular issue. On the other hand, to what extent Rav Moshe's psak is mainstream or not mainstream, that we'll see as we continue. But I think what we've seen so far is that it's not so simple to argue that in the case that Rav Moshe was dealing with, that this is a Torah level of Lifnei Iver. Would you agree with me at this point right now? Is this really going to be a case of two sides of the river and the person could not have sinned without you? Very difficult to argue that. So if that's the case, we're dealing with the rabbinic level of Lifnei Iver. So if I follow Rashi, so then it's also, I say something today, then something tomorrow, that's not even a rabbinic level of Lifnei Iver. There are some who say that, there are some who argue that you can never do Lifnei Iver by words, that Lifnei Iver is only with actions. For example, handing the wine to the Nazir is Lifnei Iver. There are those who claim that Lifnei Iver is not necessarily by words. Again, how strong that argument is, I'm not going to evaluate, but that is an opinion. If you're going to say that the problem is one of tochacha, the problem is one of rebuke, okay, so then theoretically, there's what to talk about still. Nonetheless, this the position of Rav Moshe is not as simple as he puts forth, and therefore we are going to proceed. The second tshuva that I want to do, and I'm just trying to decide which one I want to do second, is, should we flip a coin? The second one we'll see is of Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. Now, I changed my mind. We're gonna do on this page over here, which says Tshuvot V'Hanhagot. Tshuvot V'Hanhagot is a contemporary. His name is Rav Moshe Sternbach. Rav Moshe Sternbach lives in Har Nof. You can go visit him this afternoon if you'd like to. You don't have it? Rav Moshe Sternbach is the Skan Hanasi, the vice president of the Eda Charedis. I can't say Eda Charedit because that's not what he is. That's not what he is. Rav Moshe Sternbach is very interesting. He wrote a book years and years ago, which has really got his reputation, called Moedim V'Zmanim, which was like the classic book to find every single chumrah on every single thing that no one ever thought of. You would read this book just because he would bring something up that no one ever thought of. And because it was fun. It was fun. And if anybody really did want to create the mythological Chumrah of the Month Club, that would be a great way to do it, because he would just always find fascinating things to say. And then, lo and behold, the same Rav Moshe Sternbach later on writes She'elot v'Tshuvot. Now, there's something very interesting about his She'elot v'Tshuvot. First of all, I think it was primarily because of health concerns, he ended up spending half the year, for many, many years, in South Africa. Those of you who are not necessarily familiar with the community in South Africa, it has undergone an incredible renaissance in terms of Jewish practice. It was a community which almost exclusively, 85, 90, 95% of the community were people that came from Lita, from Lithuania. People came from Vilna and moved there. And these were like the first generation were the classic guys who were learning on Shabbat while smoking cigarettes and their kids off, and education was abysmal. And the whole community moved away. And something happened a number of years ago that the community started to come closer. Ursa Meach did an incredible job over there. And one of the people that was there in the background as a posek for that community was Rav Sternbach. I have a bunch of the volumes of his Shelot and Tshuvot at home. I once went through all of them and counted up how many Tshuvot he has reaching out to a Baal Tshuva community. And I have a whole list if anybody wants my I wrote an index of it. Anybody wants it, I'll give it to you. But there are dozens upon dozens of these Tshuvot that he has. And the other thing which is remarkable is how lenient he is. So in terms of his theoretical book, it's the most stringent things imaginable he introduces. And in terms of practical halacha, he comes on every single leniency you can imagine, and there are some leniencies that you cannot even begin to imagine. Okay? And what?
He says this
to
me.
They're published in his books. Remarkable kulot that he has in it. Over here, the question that he deals with is Siman Shin Nun Chet Sheila Ben Baal Tshuva. The son is a Baal Tshuva. Mazmin Harav Lesudat Leil Shabbat, wants to invite his parents on Friday night. V'yodea Sheyachzeru LeBeitam B'Machonit, and he knows that his parents are going to go back by car. So here the case is, the kid was a Baal Tshuva, the parents are not, and can't invite his parents Friday night for dinner. Okay? He writes, Hine tanata benhu, the kid's claim is, Shebederech zu, hu mekarev et harav liyahadut, that he's going to bring his parents closer to Judaism. Rak shechoshesh v'mach shemach shilam lechalel Shabbat, but he's afraid that he's causing them to break Shabbat. Avo mi'idich, on the other hand, hein belav hachi mechalim Shabbat. Even otherwise, they're breaking Shabbat, which means this is not exactly two sides of the river, right? Anyway, they're breaking Shabbat. V'loch pat lehem, and they don't care. Rak tikvato, what's his hope? Shela'at la'at yitkarvu uledvarav kvar ra'ah hitkadmut. He thinks they're going to get close. He's already seen changes in their attitude. Sheyesh etzlam kvar gisha acheret ladat. They already have a different approach to religion they had before. And he thinks it's because he's bringing them closer. And he invites them, even though they drive home afterwards. And he asks, but maybe nonetheless I'm not able to do this because of Lifnei Iver. So again, the question over here is very, very clear. Nira, it seems, she is so to Isid Lifnei Iver, who domi de Iver shemich shilo. That it seems to be that the problem of the Iver is that you are hurting them, you are causing them to stumble. Aval im kavanato rak latovat atzmo lo nikra machshil. If you want to help them, then that's not called causing someone to stumble. Ella, and he gives a comparison with all of us, I hope will appreciate, after having learned the sugya of cosmetic surgery. He writes, Ella kamoshi rafi minateach lo nikra maka chaviro. A surgeon is not considered somebody who damages the person even though they make an incision. Why? Because what do? You don't look at the micro action, you look at the macro result. Yes, you make an incision in one part of the body to fix the body. So therefore, an incision to fix is not called hitting somebody, it's not called chabalah, and one is permitted to do this. Kach kan halo ein kavanato lahara lo olia etzlo etzah she'ena hogenet. His intention is not to hurt his parents or to give them bad advice. His intention is to instruct them, to bring them closer to truth. And the fact that they're breaking Shabbat along the way, he goes, that's not really lifnei iver. That's something which they're choosing to do themselves. He's inviting them for dinner. I mean, what does he want? He wants them to come for dinner. What does he want? He wants them to see the Shabbat candles. What does he want? He wants them to see their grandchildren and listen to them say a Dvar Torah. What doesn't he want? He doesn't want them to drive, which means that's not what he wants to happen. His advice to them is, come and see Shabbat. He's not instructing them, telling them, I want you to drive, which, Elaine, may be different from your example before. The adiraba, the opposite is true. He tells them a little, you know, makes me a little sad that you drive. Once he tells them, you know, I want you to come, I want you to be with us, but, you know, when you drive, it makes me a little sad. That's it. You've already given your tochacha. You've already told them they're not supposed to drive. You've already done what you have to do, and all that you're doing is you're causing them to come and have a Shabbat meal. And therefore, you can't call it lifnei iver if you have their best wishes or best interest in mind. And what does he quote? He says, "V'ayin shach, v'dogu marvarva," which is also commentary of the Note Behudah on Shulchan Aruch, "Yerdeya she'ein chiyuv lafrishmuam be'isur." He quoted that shach by somebody who's not religious. That there's no problem of lifnei iver by somebody who's non-religious. So he, but you notice he quoted that in parentheses, because I'm not sure how far he was willing to take it, but he did quote it as sort of like an additional thing. Amnam. Chilul Hashem Yeshkan. On the other hand, there could be a desecration of God's name. Shabaim lebeito b'machonit b'farhesya be'etzem yom haShabbat. That publicly, they're going to drive and pull up to his house. U'lechein yesh lerot shal kol panim lo yuchanu et mechonitam samuch lebeito b'makom shirgishu shabo miyuchad etzlo. You should ask them not to park right in front of the house where people could feel it. Ki bavon chilul Hashem. When it comes to desecrating God's name, that doesn't make a difference if you have their good in mind or not their good in mind. They still would be desecrating God's name by pulling up right in front. And it seems to be that he should try as much as he can to tell them not to break Shabbat. But he feels, this will help and this will bring them back. He shouldn't stop out of a consideration of Lifnei Iver. Raki karevo tam kefiya afshar. He should bring them closer as much as possible. Usmo dochev yamin mekarevet, and always make sure, as much as he chastises or pushes away, always make sure that you pull with your right hand, or you pull closer much more than you possibly push away. Vizaher v'yodia otam tamid chom yichilu Shabbat. He should always mention how serious Shabbat is. Umitikut shmirata, and how sweet keeping Shabbat is. Uvizrat Hashem yitbarach yechzir otam lemutav, and with God's will, they will then come back. Ve'ein lecha kibud. And there's no greater kibud avaim than what you're doing. So first of all, it's very interesting the approach that he's taking over here. You see right away, you know, as opposed to Rav Moshe, and again, I don't know how fair it is to give the historical background again. Rav Moshe is dealing with basically what he feels is orthodoxy crumbling, and therefore we need to put up walls and fences. And what we find Rav Sternbach doing is finding a community which is of Balei Tshuva, and he says we need to open this up and bring people as much as possible. Now, would Rav Moshe had said the same thing had he lived in South Africa? I'm not convinced he would have. I mean, I'm really not convinced. And it's always very dangerous to say that a person is completely influenced because of the culture or society that they live in. On the other hand, it may be foolish to say that a person is not at all influenced by the society that he lives in. And maybe there's another issue, that because of the society that somebody lives in, it's not the same question. It's not the same question anymore. These are two different situations. But nonetheless, where we saw Rav Moshe coming and telling us, this is Lifnei Iver, and more than that, this is Mesit, or remember with the Minyan, do all that you can to stop this Minyan. Over here, we find him saying, this is a wonderful thing that you're doing. There's no greater kibud av aim than what you're doing. Trying to bring your parents back the way that you're doing it, this is absolutely a wonderful thing. Keep on going. But it seems to be that he's hedging his bets by saying, and make sure that you tell them, you know, now and again, that, you know, it's important to keep Shabbat, it's good to keep Shabbat, it's nice to keep Shabbat. And it seems to be, what's he covering by that? That even if there's a rabbinic level of lifnei iver in terms of tochacha, Rav Moshe Sternbach seems to be saying, okay, you just now covered the tochacha angle on this, and therefore you're home free. But he did another thing which was interesting, and that I want to pay attention to, even though we're going to continue next week, and you bring the same sources next week, because we're only halfway done. But the other thing that he's doing is he's saying that, how do I look at Lifnei Iver? I don't look at it in terms of a micro action, I look at it in terms of the macro situation over here. And the macro situation over here is that you have in mind not to put a stumbling block in front of this person. What is your intention? Your intention is the karev to help this person, so it can't be lifnei iver in such a case. Would Rav Moshe have agreed? Rav Moshe would have come back and said, "No, you were encouraging them to break Shabbat." So again, we have two so diametrically opposed positions over here. But it is interesting that Rav Moshe Feinstein is the one who's really known as the more lenient and the more moderate of these positions, and Rav Moshe Sternbach is most certainly more right wing and strict and so on. But nonetheless, we find that in these particular cases, they come to very, diametrically opposed positions. And again, that's why you have to be careful of not assuming just because of somebody, what you know about a posek, that you already know how they're going to rule in that particular case. Yes?
No, I was just wondering that also. How important is the element of his tshuva that says that they're kind of like on a mode of chazar v'tshuva? And how are we supposed to know that? How can you possibly know?
Right.
So, part of the parents. Yeah. Right. In other words, is it because is this tshuva based on the fact that these parents really want to? Eventually be people who keep Shabbat. And how are you how can you possibly know one way or the other?
Don't know, but I will tell you that based upon my experience or experiences in South Africa, the odds are overwhelming that these parents are today Shomer Shabbat. It was absolutely. It was absolutely successful in South Africa. It worked. A whole generation of parents and grandparents became religious after their children and grandchildren became religious. South Africa is probably the greatest model in terms of outreach working, and including breaking Shabbat across the board, working as a kirov strategy. Right.
Become more religious, and then they're cut off, and then they speak very badly about those religious.
Well, as you see, he did bring Kiddush Hashem Chilul Hashem into discussion. I'll take a couple more questions, but what I will tell you is that we will continue next week. We have some more things to say. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach also weighed in on this question. Even though his, I said before mythological, even though his tshuva was unpublished for years and was really the mythological holy grail of the Kirov movement, because he did not let it be published. He did not want people to see what he wrote. But we'll see what he did write, what he didn't write, and we will also unveil to you what he did write, because we have it here. But there's a lot more to talk about as far as that goes. Yes? So you have the same argument the other way around. I will not stay before we finish next week. I will not stay away from giving practical answers to anybody who wants them. But even though we recognize that different cases may be somewhat different, but I still want to see some more sources. A lot of rabbis say that. We'll see as we go next week again what exactly the needs are, what the parameters are, and so on. But what we saw today, I think, was something interesting. First of all, we saw that this is not cut and dried in any way, shape, or form. Rav Moshe, any of us who thought this was a simple question, Rav Moshe caught our attention right away, where we saw that he does not think that this is simple. He thinks that this is severe. He thinks that this is lifnei iver. He thinks this is a maced. I mean, again, he thinks that you, on the day of judgment, will have to stand in front of God, and God will then say to you that you caused my children to sin. And Rav Moshe is very, very strong in that, in terms of, I don't want to say emotional blackmail, but this is halachic blackmail by saying you cannot do this. Where at the same time, now you realize how Rav Moshe Sternbach did the exact opposite. And what does he say? There's no greater kibud av v'eim than what you're doing right now, and this is a wonderful thing, and keep on doing it. And maybe knowing Rav... Correct. But maybe even Rav Moshe Sternbach, being aware of the severity of Rav Moshe wrote, wanted to temper that a little bit, and therefore he throws in that this is a wonderful thing that you're doing. Don't get back down just because some other Baal Tshuva may have told you that Rav Moshe Feinstein says this is not allowed, and it's Lifnei Iver and it's Mesa. Don't worry about that. I am telling you to continue to do that. This is a wonderful thing to do. But at least what we saw so far is a contradiction or two different approaches. And next time, B'li Nedir, we'll see Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach's approach. And as I said, we will not avoid a conclusion of the topic.